Welcome to Richmond Seeds Cup with Joe. We have an action-packed episode. Regional agronomist Mitchell Oswald joins us with lots of great information on America's alfalfa. Hear all about seed prep, establishing a good stand, soil conditions, fertilization, do's and don'ts of a companion crop, insects, America's alfalfa varieties, and changes in the alfalfa industry.
Hi, this is Joe Mershman. Welcome to Mershman Seeds Cup of Joe. Today we have Ben, Lynn, and Dylan, and a very special guest to talk about alfalfa, as promised from last week. Right, Lynn?
Exactly. So today we have Mitchell Oswald with America's Alfalfa. Mitchell, do you want to just kind of introduce yourself and your role with America's Alfalfa?
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. My name is Mitchell Oswald. I am the regional alfalfa agronomist for America's Alfalfa for the entire upper Midwest. So Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, and the Missouri River Valley, Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri, you name it. So excited to be here this morning. Grew up in southeastern Minnesota on a row crop operation, raising corn, soybeans, alfalfa, then seed oats and seed barley my entire life. So alfalfa has always been a passion of mine. Excited to be here this morning, and we'll take a dive into some alfalfa management tactics this morning.
Perfect. Well, we can vouch for the passion for alfalfa that he talks about. He's probably what, one of one that we know that would, when it comes to alfalfa management and all things alfalfa, I guess, would probably be the better terminology on that.
I know just enough to be dangerous, but Mitchell can make me look very stupid very quickly. So let's glean as much information as we can out of him and get our growers off to a good start this spring.
Exactly. So I guess the reason for today's talk, we're in that time where we're nearing the optimal stages for spring alfalfa planting. So Mitchell, as we look into that, what are some good things from an alfalfa 101 standpoint that we can look at here this spring to make sure that we establish a good stand for alfalfa for the years to come?
Yeah, so we need to be taking a look at soil temperatures. And instead of looking at the calendar date, we really need to be looking at what are our top 4-inch soil temps. So we want to see soil temperatures 41 degrees Fahrenheit or higher before we start to establish alfalfa. I've been digging in a lot of fields these last couple of weeks, and that soil is cold. So I say if you can't walk out there barefoot and be comfortable, you probably shouldn't be seeding your alfalfa yet. If we have soil temps in the 40 to 50 degree Fahrenheit range, that means alfalfa is going to germinate within about 7 to 10 days. But optimal soil temps would actually be 60 plus degree soil temperatures, which we would see soil with germination in 2 to 4 days. So here in the upper Midwest, I always say about a week and a half before we go out and plant corn is usually when we should be out there planting our alfalfa. And there's a lot of excitement because we've had an unusually warm winter, so growers are excited to go, but we really need to hold back. If we plant too early and our soil temperatures are still in the 30s, we create more room for disease, Pythium, Rhizoctonia, Fusarium, seed-borne and soil-borne diseases to inhibit that germination process and that healthy growth. So we're looking at 40-plus degree soil temps consistently before we go out there, and likewise before our alfalfa is going to break dormancy. A lot of questions have been coming in. Mitchell, should we be concerned? Is our alfalfa going to break dormancy, and are we going to have some winter injury? And right now, we've had excellent soil temperatures all winter long. So for winter injury and crown damage, what we would need to see is soil temperatures in that 5 to 15 degree Fahrenheit range. Generally speaking, if soil temps in the top 4 inches fall below 13 degrees Fahrenheit, that's where we'll see significant winter injury and crown death or crown rot, and we'll see unsymmetrical growth headed into spring. But with the warm temps, the soil temperatures have consistently been in the 20s and 30s throughout the winter, and so we're sitting in a really good position to have healthy stands coming into spring. Make sure you're out there examining stands. What we say for a good alfalfa stand is one that has 55 stems per square foot. So the spring of the year is a great time to be out there examining your alfalfa stems. We want at least 5 healthy plants per square foot, and each of those plants should have at least 10 healthy symmetrical stems on each crown. So if we got 5 healthy plants with 10 stems per crown, If we got 50 plus stems per square foot, we're sitting in a really good spot. And if it's a new seeding, we have potential to have even more than that. But stem density and crown health, as we split open those crowns, I've been looking at a lot of crowns and some older stands, you'll start to see necrosis and browning. The lookout is, we know a crown is healthy if we split it down the middle and it's nice and white and has a creamy, healthy color. If we're seeing discoloration or that tissue is soft and not firm, then we know we've seen some winter injury or some crown rot, and we need to assess those stands very closely. Root scores that are healthy are going to be firm and white. That's going to be zeros. One, you'll start to see some mottling. That crown will gain a little bit of a brown color. But when we really start to get in the danger zone is when in that top couple inches, and as we assess that crown, we see a browning and necrosis that spreads greater than a third of the diameter of that taproot. So make sure you can pull up alfalfa stand assessment, a score book from the alfalfa management guide, or easily find that and take a look at where is the color of that crown and what is the symmetry of that crown. Do we have a lot of uneven growth? If those crown buds are damaged, you're going to see uneven growth, or you're going to see growth off to one side of that plant. So look for the symmetry and the color of that crown.
So we're looking at 55 stems per square foot. When should a grower be thinking about, you know, it's time to plow this down and get some corn planted and rotate another field in? What's the number that you'd like to pull the trigger on for abandoning a stand?
Yeah, so if we get down to below 50 stems per square foot, if we're in the 45 to 50 range, that's where we should be looking at rotating out of that stand, because every stem we lose below 55 stems, every stem is additional 1 to 1.5% of yield loss. And by the time we're at 40 stems per square foot, we've lost 25% of our yield potential. So definitely by 40. But if we're losing symmetry, if that plant looks thin, if there's a lot of winter perennials or winter annuals that are sneaking into that stand, it's time to rotate out, utilize that 150 to 190 pound nitrogen credit we have on silt loams and on clays, or that 100 to 140 pound nitrogen credit that we're going to receive on a sand.
Very good.
So going to preparation for this this spring and on a new seed, what's your recommendation when it comes to tillage, no tillage? How does the seed prep work for you know, say someone that's just getting into the alfalfa game and wants to plant 5 or 10 acres? What kind of equipment is needed, and what kind of techniques do you find that works the best to establish the best stand?
Yeah, so I'll start off with no-till scenarios. And when we're establishing an alfalfa stand no-till, the most important thing is residue management. So it's easiest to follow no-till alfalfa into standing bean stubble, and you already have a nice firm seed bed. That's what we want with alfalfa, that nice firm seed bed. We don't want to be able to sink our sole of our boot deeper than a quarter of an inch. So in a no-till situation, the best success we have is with no-till seed drills. Landals, Great Plains, if you have a no-till seed drill that you can set, we want that seed depth just underneath the soil surface, a quarter inch. That's where we want to place alfalfa. If we're on a sand and we're searching for moisture, we may go slightly deeper, up to half an inch deep, but we want to see 10 to 15% of the seed on top of the soil surface a little bit, and we want the majority of that seed underneath. So take your no-till drill, seed a little ways, set your seeding rate, go out, examine where your seedling depth is. We don't want to get deeper than half an inch on silts and clays, because we know that the germination process can dip way off and we reduce the number of plants per square foot. So no-till drill has the highest rate of success because we get excellent seed to soil contact with that press wheel, and the seed being placed directly in front of that press wheel. That's great for seed to soil contact. If we're going to broadcast, if we're going to airflow it on, if we're going to broadcast with dry fertilizer, then we need to up the seeding rate by 20%. So in a drilled scenario, a seeding rate of 18 to 25 pounds per acre, that's going to give you a really nice stand. We're shooting for 70 plants per square foot. We know that for every pound, we have roughly 3.5 seeds per pound. So for example, if you're seeding 20 pounds per acre times the 3.5 seeds per pound of seed in a square foot, that will give you roughly 70 plants per square foot that we're shooting for. So I recommend 20 to 25 pounds an acre if you're drilling it, or 25 to 30 pounds an acre if you're in a broadcast situation, to up that seeding rate so that you get more seed to soil contact, and because of the reduced germination that you see there. Now, if we are in a tillage situation, then we want to till up that soil with a field cultivator or disc. We want to then roll the soil, pack it with a cultipacker or a land roller, then drill the seed with either a Brillion or a standard grain drill or even a no-till drill, and then pack it again. So till, pack, drill, pack. And it again goes to being able to bounce that basketball off the soil surface, not have impression that's going to sink deeper than a quarter of an inch. We want that firm, clod-free, clean seed bed from the start.
So then we all know that it seems like each crop needs a different pH. So when we're trying to establish a good alfalfa stand, what are you recommending that we need to get to that soil pH?
Yeah, so optimal soil pH for alfalfa is 6.8 to 7.2. That's where we want to see pH. And when you talk about alfalfa yields, low pH is the most limiting factor to alfalfa yield. And so for every tenth of a point that you fall below a pH of 6.8, you can expect a tenth of a ton of forage yield production loss from a low pH. So for example, if you're at a pH of 6.0 and you need to be at 6.8, you can expect 8/10 of a ton of forage yield production loss each year. Or even if you're at 6.7, you can expect 1/10 of a ton yield production for the alfalfa production for that year. So it's critical to have a pH of 6.8 to 7.2. We want that pH to be at least 6.5, because what happens is as you lower that soil pH, it creates a more acidic environment, which the rhizobia bacteria do not like. They do not fix as much atmospheric nitrogen and drive as much nitrogen into the plant. And that nitrogen fixation is what drives your biomass production in alfalfa. So if you have a low pH, it's going to affect your nodulation, which is going to affect your biomass production. So make sure you have a pH of 6.5 or greater heading into spring. And if you don't, test soil test and make sure that you have a proper application of lime. We want to utilize ag lime and have that out there with plenty of time to neutralize the soil and raise that pH.
So, Mitchell, what's your opinion on how to raise the highest yielding alfalfa that's out there? What's your opinion on what the best way to fertilize that alfalfa?
So for high yielding management, we want to have that phosphorus incorporated for alfalfa ahead of time. So even if you can throw 2 to 3 years of phosphorus out there before that stand is established, phosphorus is very mobile. You want that fertility deep. So on high CC soils and even on sandy soils, that phosphorus is not going anywhere. Ensure that you have good phosphorus and potassium levels. We want to see phosphorus with soil fertility levels at 30 parts per million or higher, and we want to see soil potassium levels at 150 parts per million or higher to start with. So if we don't have that, we want to make sure that we're applying our fertilizer removal rates for our yield goals. So high yielding alfalfa, the varieties very easily have the capability to raise 8 to 10 tons of dry matter yields. The limiting factors are pH, potassium, and phosphorus in many cases, as well as sulfur and boron. So the best management practice is to incorporate fertility ahead of time before that stand is established. Make sure your fertilizer is in a good spot, and then have a maintenance program after first and third cutting. In many cases where you have several hundred pounds of potash, at least 20 to 25 pounds of sulfur, at least once, if not twice, and then 1 to 3 pounds of boron. Of course, we don't have that boron during stand establishment because there's some toxicity there, but we want to raise those fertility levels ahead of time. And right now, in the spring, in established stands, while alfalfa is dormant, that is a great time to be out there spreading your fertilizer removal rates for this year. But oftentimes, my recommendation is take after first and third cutting, go out there, spread your fertility needs with your phosphorus, your potassium, your sulfur, and your boron. And for new seedings, apply your fertility ahead of time. If you're on a light CEC soil, keep in mind alfalfa can have luxury consumption of potassium, so no more than 400 pounds of potash at any one time on those light CEC soils.
So when we talk about new stand establishment, we always get the question every year, and we have an opinion on it, but just curious on your opinion of a companion crop and what's the do's and don'ts if you think that you need to have one, and what should be the recommended potential crops and what would be the rate to go along with alfalfa in the spring.
Okay, so the recommended seeding rate for a companion crop, if you are raising alfalfa underneath, is 25 to 50% of the rate of what you would seed it for grain. So oats to grain is generally 3 bushels to an acre. If you are seeding or under seeding alfalfa or having a nurse crop or companion crop, you should have no more than 1 bushel to 1.5 bushels of oats in that field. And we run trials every single year at our research facilities. The best alfalfa is always alfalfa that's direct seeded, or alfalfa where you have alfalfa that is under seeded under a nurse or companion crop, and then that oats or the barley or the triticale is taken off during boot stage, because that gives that alfalfa plant plenty of time to recover, versus if we take that oats or that companion crop all the way to grain, two things happen. We see a large amount of insects, especially potato leafhoppers, move into alfalfa. And potato leafhoppers utilize their piercing, sucking mouthparts to repeatedly lacerate cells. And they secrete an enzyme that blocks nutrient flow in the vascular tissues, in xylem and phloem, which causes hopper burn and reduces protein content and stunts alfalfa. So we see a large amount of insects move in, stunt alfalfa. And then we also can see if we have a late maturing nurse crop. If we have a late maturing oat, a late maturing barley, that oat or that barley or that nurse crop will continue to compete with that alfalfa and take up nutrients and potentially lodge. If you have a high yielding nurse crop, that variety can potentially lodge and smother alfalfa. So 25 to 50% is the rule of thumb. Great companion crops are going to be oats, barley, and triticale. We want to tend to stay away from rye and wheat because they have a much stronger growth habit and they're more detrimental to underseeding alfalfa. So the general rule of thumb is 30 pounds per acre. So that's just under 1 bushel for oats. If you're seeding a barley, again, we want to be at least 50% of the seeding rate. Barley for grain would be 2 bushels, so we want 1 bushel or less. But keep in mind that 30 pounds per acre, that's a good rate to be at. And if you're cutting it off for boot stage, for feed, that 50% rate will keep that alfalfa crop thriving underneath. You want to keep that alfalfa crop in mind. That's the main crop.
So you said a little bit about leaf hoppers. We know in this area they can become pretty detrimental to our yield. So what would you recommend doing to either prevent some of the damage or management practices that you would hit those leaf hoppers head on with?
So to start off with the threshold for potato leaf hoppers, one of the things we can do is we can plant a potato leaf hopper resistant variety. In the America's Alfalfa lineup, we have Ameristan 419 leaf hopper. That is excellent for leaf hopper resistance. And generally speaking, the threshold for potato leaf hoppers is going to be in 10 sweeps. You should have less than the amount of leaf hoppers for the height of the alfalfa. So, for example, in 4-inch alfalfa, in 10 sweeps with a sweep net, you should have less than 4 leaf hoppers in 10 sweeps, or you've met threshold and you should go out there and spray. That is for traditional alfalfa varieties. If you have a potato leaf hopper variety, they have glandular hair trait expression. So it reduces the reproduction of potato leaf hoppers and also affects their ability to access that plant. And then you would be able to withstand 10 times the leaf hopper threshold. So in 4-inch alfalfa, instead of being able to only withstand 4 leaf hoppers in 10 sweeps, you could withstand 40 leaf hoppers in 10 sweeps. Or 6-inch alfalfa, where your traditional alfalfa could only withstand 6 leaf hoppers in 10 sweeps, a potato leaf hopper variety is going to be able to withstand 60 leaf hoppers in 10 sweeps. So planting a leaf hopper resistant variety is one of the key management tools that you can that can help manage potato leaf hopper damage in season. The other thing is spraying an insecticide, pyrethroid, when you come up against potato leaf hoppers. Arctic Warrior 2, there's a lot of classes of insecticides that you can use that once you meet economic threshold, go out there and make an application. Keep in mind your pre-harvest interval. If you're approaching harvest, then we can also harvest that alfalfa to mitigate or help control, schedule an early harvest to reduce damage.
Perfect. Well, you mentioned 419. What's some other varieties that you have in your lineup that you're pretty excited about for this year?
Yeah, so when we start talking about the mainstay conventional, Ameristan 428 has me very, very excited because of the new disease package that's incorporated in that. So that variety replaced Ameristan 427, which was a phenomenal variety. And 428 is what we call an ultra cut variety. And what these ultra cuts are they have the best in class race 5 anthracnose. So the highest level of resistance to race 5 anthracnose, which is a major cause of crown rot in alfalfa. So when you split a stem and you see necrosis and browning, a large part of that can be anthracnose, which causes both stem and crown rot. And you'll see diamond-shaped lesions, especially when we have warm and humid conditions on alfalfa. So we have the highest level of resistance to the new anthracnose strains, as well as aphanomyces. And aphanomyces is a lateral root pruner. So it prunes the surface area that plant has to be able to take up nutrients, and it can cause yield losses as much as 25% to 30%, as well as large amounts of seedling death. So the number one thing you can do to prevent seedling death and to encourage healthy stands is plant the best disease package on the market, and those varieties are those designated with UltraCut. That's exclusive to Forage Genetics. And that's going to be in Ameristan 428. When we talk conventional varieties, that is the highest yielding conventional variety we have offered. What makes that unique is it has a fall dormancy of 4-4, so a very high yielding, fast growing alfalfa variety with a winter hardiness of 1-3. And when we talk winter hardiness, we want to have a winter hardiness below 2 to be able to survive the harsh winters. A winter hardiness near 1 is almost unheard of. That is an extremely hardy variety that's going to be able to withstand the harsh cold conditions and a top yielder in the conventional choice. So when you look at the America's options in conventional, Ameristan 428 is a super high yielding variety with excellent winter hardiness, perfect for 3 to 5 cuts for dairymen or beef cattle producers. And then Ameristan 419 is also an excellent high-yielding variety. That's going to be a fall dormancy 4, winter hardiness 2 product with the leaf hopper trait to be to withstand 10 times the leafhopper pressure. Now, when we jump into the Roundup Ready varieties, we're very excited to be releasing a new variety called a Mairestand 423 Roundup Ready Ultra Cut. Eventually, this variety will replace a Mairestand 457. The difference being it has the Ultra Cut disease package, going to offer top of the line yields for a fall dormancy 4, and it has a winter hardiness of 1. It is the most winter hardy variety we have ever released to date for the America's Alfalfa lineup. So a fall dormancy 4, a winter hardiness 1 option with a very super deep set crown with excellent traffic tolerance. So look at that option in the future here for top line alfalfa yields. And a Mairestand 457 TQ Roundup Ready is our current highest yielding Roundup Ready alfalfa variety. Extremely good resistance HR to AF2, and that is a full fall dormancy 4.2 product with a winter hardiness of 1.8. So 457 here in the next year will be slowly phasing out, and it will be on to the new Mairestand 423 Roundup Ready Ultra Cut variety. Then when we jump to the top line products, we have a Mairestand 481 Harvextra. And the benefit there is that you have the flexibility to be able to harvest all the way up to 40 days with excellent quality and excellent yield. So a Harvextra variety is going to be 22% lower in lignin content, reduced ADL, and it is genetically modified to have that trait. So it has a 7 to 10 day quality advantage on conventional alfalfa. So if, for example, if you harvest conventional alfalfa at 28 days, Harvextra is going to have that same quality at 35 days with an additional 125 pounds of dry matter yield for each additional day that you let it grow. So 7 days later, you'd have 7 times 125, you've had over 800 pounds of additional dry matter yield with that 7 day quality advantage. Or if you cut that variety early on a day for day, say your conventional was cut at 28 days and tested 150, the Harvextra variety will consistently test 10 to 15 points higher. So Harvextra cut at the same 28 days, if conventional tested 150, the Harvextra should test 160 to 165 and even higher in some cases. So that be the mainstay lineup. And then we're also excited, SS120 was renamed AS430 Blend. So that product is going to be a phenomenal fall dormancy 4, winter hardiness 2 product. That's going to be a blend of excellent alfalfa options. And then a premium blend new this year is going to be a Mairestand 432. That is a premium alfalfa blend that is going to have extra nematode and traffic tolerance. And so when you look at conventionals, first position, a Mairestand 428 with the Ultra Cut disease package, but know that there's also two very economical options, a Mairestand 432 blend, which is going to be a premium alfalfa blend, and then SS120 renamed Mairestand AS430 blend. To signify the first number in the America's lineup being that fall dormancy. So anything that starts with a 4 is going to be a fall dormancy 4. Anything with a 3 would be a 3, and continually working to develop those varieties.
So we all know, and I've seen the data on the quality on the Harvextra and the quality and the flexibility on timing, but there's competition that's out there in the marketplace that claims similar quality and flexibility, and we know that's not true. And one of the things I kind of wanted you to touch on is just a brief overview of what the 428 looks like from a conventional standpoint to in comparison to what some of your competitors are talking about in their, you know, ultra high quality style of alfalfas. I mean, the 428 is not only keeping up, but it is blowing that competition out of the water in a conventional, much less where we're at with the Harvextra, correct?
Correct. When we look at the Ultra Cut varieties, on average, they have been yielding an additional ton of dry matter over any other variety. So 10 to 15% above the competition. So the varieties, Mairestand 428, the new Roundup Ready, Ameristan 423 Roundup Ready, and the Ameristan 481 Harv Extra all have that UltraCut disease package that have consistently been yielding 10 to 15% above the competition. And so when we look at the varieties or the traits, Harv Extra is the only genetically engineered modified variety for reduced lignin content. So you have other companies out there that will claim, oh, it's bred for low lignin content. It's inherently bred in the breeding program. It does not even statistically compare at the university level or at our level when you do research for a genetically engineered reduced trait. And when you look at the quality, that TQ, that stands for traffic. America's Alfalfa is the only variety that is traffic tested. And we run over it consistently. And we beat down those varieties. And we select only those varieties that repeatedly handle that traffic tolerance, that grow back vigorously, that have excellent crown bud formation, and that withstand also salt testing. When we send off varieties to salt nurseries, spread thousands of pounds of salt out there, and then select only those varieties that are able to withstand the salt tolerance, the 428 is going to be a superior option to anything on the market that the competition has, which would only be for disease package, Phantomyces race 2 variety. So it has high, those varieties would have high levels of resistance to race 1 and race 2 of Phantomyces, but not the new evolving of Phantomyces strains or the race 5 anthracnose. And how I like to describe it is it's like the law of the minimum. We have a lot of diseases in our upper Midwestern soils that were affecting alfalfa. And when you look at an AF2 variety, they may look good from the field and they may yield well, but when you compare them side by side with an UltraCut, it's night and day difference. We bred in the diseases that were holding alfalfa stands back, anthracnose and aphantomyces being the two largest limiting factors. And now we have alfalfa varieties that are significantly better with disease ratings of 40 out of 40 or 39 out of 40 compared to the previous best disease rating of 35 out of 35.
Very good. Very exciting when you're talking about alfalfa. There's a little bit of news in the marketplace that not everybody has heard about. Lynn, you want to highlight some of that and kind of talk about how well we're positioned?
Yeah. So for those that maybe aren't as familiar with alfalfa, there has been, and Mitch, you can allude to this as well, there's been a little bit of changes in the industry from an alfalfa supplier standpoint and how that dynamic has changed and how it affects the end user. We are very fortunate that we have partnered with America's Alfalfa and Forage Genetics to be our supplier for alfalfa. Some other companies have exited the alfalfa game, and Mitchell, do you want to just kind of allude to kind of who they are and how does that position you guys for the future, and how does that translate to the farmer and the options that he has moving forward?
Yeah, so there's been some large changes in the alfalfa industry from some of the largest alfalfa distributors. In 2022, we saw Bayer leave the alfalfa market, and that consisted of over 25,000 bags of alfalfa seed. And the main, there was 12 regional brands there, the main two being DeKalb and Channel. And because of the perennial nature of alfalfa, we are still seeing those growers continually request for America's alfalfa varieties to replace Bayer genetics because Bayer no longer offers alfalfa varieties, and that their last year of seed sales was before the fall of 2022. So Bayer has now been out for over a year and farmers are still asking. So make sure to continually position Ameristan 428 for conventional and the Roundups and the America's alfalfa lineup. And then when we look at the newest industry news, by 2025, Pioneer and Corteva as a whole, Dairyland will completely have exited the alfalfa business. So right now, in 2024, they continue to phase out what they had for existing alfalfa inventories. And by January of 2025, there will no longer be a Pioneer alfalfa sold in a Pioneer or a Dairyland bag. And that will be a huge opportunity for the market. Those growers, because of the disruption, are continually seeking after the best alfalfa genetics. And so we continue to look to be well-positioned with the newest and the best alfalfas on the market in the Americas lineup to direct those growers to Ameristan products and capture and earn their business.
That just sounds just like a commercial. Worked out nice. Perfect. What other questions we got for Mitchell? I think we covered a lot.
The other concern that I foresee coming into spring with the warm temperatures that we've had is that usually during a harsh winter, we would see alfalfa weevil larvae that are alfalfa weevil eggs that were laid in the fall by any adults killed off. Generally speaking, we could see two hatches with the warm weather in southern part of Iowa. If we reach 250 GDUs or growing degree days, that's where we want to start scouting for alfalfa weevils. And in northern Iowa, 200 growing degree days with the bottom threshold starting at 43 degrees. So we're not going to see any egg development or larvae development before then. But we want to continually monitor for alfalfa weevils going in spring. Those adults are going to become active in April and May as they come out of the shelter belts. They're about a quarter inch long, brown with some golden hairs and a dark stripe down the middle of their back. And they'll start to lay eggs, clusters of up to 25 eggs in a stem. And then within about 2 weeks, we'll start to see, based off of GDU development, kind of that magic number of 300 growing degree days, we'll start to see larvae hatch. And they have four instar stages, and they can continually progressively feed. So they start to feed on the fresh terminal buds on the growth. They like that top growth. It starts off with pinholes, and before long, as the larvae advance, they go from a kind of a more of a yellowish color, a wrinkly yellowish color, to becoming green. The lookout is alfalfa weevils are green with a dark black head with a white stripe down the middle of their back. So be on the lookout for alfalfa weevils in your fields this spring. Once the adults lay the eggs, we'll see hatch in about 2 weeks, and then they'll progressively feed for about 3 to 4 weeks before they will pupate, and then they'll become an adult after about 8 weeks. And then the adults will feed for another 2 to 3 weeks before they go into summer dormancy and go off to the shelter belts. But any eggs that were laid in the fall and then the eggs laid in the spring, we could see heavy feeding this spring. So we want to be out on the lookout for fields that are silver. And if we see more than two alfalfa weevils per square foot, we've met threshold and it's time to go out there and spray or schedule harvest and expose them to UV rays. So be on the lookout for that this spring.
Very informative. Now, I just wanted to clarify, when you're talking GDUs and you're saying bases, it's not the same. Is it the same base 50 or is it a base 43?
So on the alfalfa weevils, that would be a base temp of 48, not 43. Base temp on alfalfa weevil is 48 degrees Fahrenheit. So we need to average at least 49 degrees Fahrenheit, at least be above 48 for an average. So if we had a 50 degree day and a low of 48, that would give us an average of 49 divide, add 48 plus 50 divide by 2. Give us 49, subtract that base of 48, that would give us the first GD growing degree day for alfalfa weevil. So the base temp on that is 48 degrees Fahrenheit, and then make sure to add up those growing degree days. And once we get to about 300 is the magic number, 250, that accounts for larvae that was killed in the over winter. But with the winter that has not been, some of the fall laid eggs could have survived, and that's where we use that 250 growing degree mark in southern Iowa, south of 80, and north of Iowa, 200 growing degree days.
Perfect. Lots of great information there.
Yep.
Perfect. Mitchell, we are going to have to subject you to Joe's corny joke, and I apologize for that, but that's what it takes. It's part of the rite of ritual here, so we're going to thank you for your time. All of our sales managers have access to Mitchell, so if you have any questions for Mitchell directly, he's one of the best, if not the best person in his world that can answer questions and talk any lingo on any level. So if you'd like to get a hold of Mitchell, go through one of your area sales managers if you're a Mershman customer. So again, I really appreciate your time, Mitchell, and I apologize at the same time that we're going to put you through the next couple minutes here.
Well, I tell you what, I outdid myself this week. Some really, really, really bad ones. Okay. And you know, since we're starting to get spring and we're starting to get some showers, I thought I'd kind of focus on those types of corny jokes, okay? How do brand new spring flowers greet each other? Hey, bud. Could work for alfalfa, too. Okay? All right. In the spring, it can rain cats and dogs. When does it rain monkeys? April. April. Okay. What do you call it when it rains turkeys and chickens? Foul weather. Okay.
I'm getting somewhere.
The last one. Okay. What do you call a deer who enjoys playing in the rain? What do you call a deer who enjoys playing in the rain? Reindeer. You kind of could have guessed that one.
Yeah.
Well,
I've got one for you, Joe. Why do dairy cows only like to eat square hay?
I don't know.
Square bales. They like a nice square meal.
Yep, that makes sense.
There we go.
We'll end it on that. Thanks, Mitchell. Appreciate your insight. Very, very good information. And as always, we appreciate everyone's business. If you need alfalfa, call us. We can help you. Hope your family is safe, and we'll see you next week.